So we're close to midway in our winter retreat. Been developing the theme of Satipatthana for this last period of time with lots of reflections and readings on right mindfulness, the practice of Satipatthana as outlined in the teachings. Had a fair amount of general readings of Sati and Satipatthana, introductory sections of a different number of collections of different commentators, scholars, practitioners, as well as a fair amount of time spent on contemplation, the first Satipatthana contemplation of the body, and moving into some specific readings of contemplation of feeling, a feeling tone, Vedana, Vipassana, the second frame of reference, the second Satipatthana. And I thought tonight I'd just spend a little bit of time reflecting on the third Satipatthana, moving into contemplation of mind, Chittanupassana. Not that we have any particular prescribed order for this 3 months. It will be moving in and out of different areas. I think Ajahn Chunda will be doing some readings on the hindrances coming up soon. Very important aspect of our mindfulness practice. But the section on contemplation of mind, Chittanupassana, is actually in the sutta itself, it's a fairly short section, similar to the section on feeling tone, Vedana, fairly short part of the discourse, but it outlines a very impactful part of the practice and refers to a number of different contemplations that are expounded on in other places in the canon. So even though it's brief and kind of in an outline form, it forms the structure for some very potent contemplations. And is one that's, in addition to the contemplation of the body, one that's picked up in different ways quite strongly by senior teachers of in our community, some of the senior Kluba Ajahns. So the sutta begin, I'll paraphrase here, but that section of the sutta begins with, how does a bhikkhu, how does a monk contemplate the mind in and of itself? Contemplates the mind affected by greed or lust as a mind affected by greed or lust. Contemplates the mind not affected by greed as not affected by greed. The bhikkhu contemplates the mind affected by hatred as the mind affected by hatred, and contemplates the mind not affected by hatred as the mind not affected by hatred. Contemplates the mind affected by delusion as the mind affected by delusion, and contemplates the mind not affected by delusion as not affected by delusion. So you can see as it's starting out, it's this aspect of contemplation of that state of mind, that is a quality of mind, quality of chitta that's just in and of itself without any kind of evaluative process happening at this point anyway. Just noticing the presence or the absence of these particular, starting with anyway, these three root disturbances, these three root causes of suffering. Are greed, hatred, and delusion and or delusion present, or are they absent? Just basically noting that presence or absence of those states of mind without jumping yet into any kind of antidote or application of mind to increase the skillful and decrease the unskillful. And then continues on with some other mind qualities like that. Looking at the tone of the mind, the heart, chitta, rather than necessarily active contents of that. In the past, we've contemplated in the feeling aggregate, in the feeling section, the presence or absence and the effect of Vedana and perception as well, sanya, which could be called chitta sankara, their mental objects, or and they are a bit more of the resultant side of the whole process, mental process. And we've noted their presence or their absence and the effect that they have and how we work with them in that second satipatthana. And also now moving into more of the affective quality, the flavor, the color of the mind in this contemplation of the mind itself. So moving beyond those first three qualities of mind that we're noticing, the bhikkhu knows the contracted mind as contracted, or the distracted mind as distracted. Contracted mind being the quality of being closed in, heavy, covered over, similar to maybe a very dull, drowsy kind of state of mind, contracted, very small, narrow, or distracted, which is its qualitative opposite of being just out there all over the place, unfocused, unable to maintain a grounding of any kind. So contracted, one knows it's contracted. Distracted, one knows it's distracted. The next pair, these come in pairs in this framework. And the next pair is one knows the exalted mind as exalted and the unexalted mind as unexalted, generally referring as the with the presence of things like the Brahma Viharas, the four divine abidings that are very expansive, very spacious, very broad, open, and of course extremely skillful states of mind. So knowing their presence or their absence, is the mind expansive and exalted and broad and boundless, or is it small and again narrow, constricted? And then one also knows the surpassed mind as surpassed, or the unsurpassed mind as unsurpassed. Essentially, the qualities of certain meditative states that have been understood and realized and experienced, or their absence, whether the mind is able to move beyond what it's currently experiencing into some even more unsurpassable state of mind, to the point of possibly the, it's kind of a little bit hard, it's not completely defined in the sutta, but all the way up to the highest levels of samadhi. And then one knows the concentrated mind as concentrated, or the unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated, or maybe better translated as composed or uncomposed, and collected or uncollected, samadhi. And then in this recension, finally, the one knows the liberated mind is liberated, and the unliberated mind is unliberated. Generally, you thought to be referring to the temporary liberation of mind that can come with samadhi as well, not necessarily the full liberation of the arahant through wisdom. So, and that's pretty much it. And then it goes into the second section of that that part of mind contemplation that's similar to the second section of all the other parts of the body, the feeling components, where it's Bhikkhu Bodhi calls it the insight section, Analeo Bhikkhu calls it the refrain, where the Buddha says in this way one contemplates the mind in its arising and passing, or in its, I'm sorry, before that, one contemplates the mind internally and externally in its arising and passing. And then, or one is just mindful that there is mind, essentially referring to the not-self aspect of the experience. And it's in this way that a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind in and of itself. Mind is mind. And that's pretty much it for the whole section. And sometimes I think it's easy to get a little bit drawn into a popular belief in some meditation circles that's pointing to an approach that basically says, Oh, well, all you have to do is without any kind of evaluation or judgment, qualitative appraisal of the situation, just basically mindfulness is knowing what's there, whether it's skillful, unskillful or not, doesn't really matter. The basic teachings say just bare awareness, just, you know, the teaching on mindfulness is just knowing the mere presence or absence and being with them as they arise and pass away. And one could get that impression from the simplicity of the way that it's stated. But if you just look into many other parts of the suttas, the teachings, you'll see that there are indeed many different references to actually one has to know these states of mind, but with an evaluative state of mind as well, so that one is always noticing whether they're skillful or unskillful and applying right effort to increase and develop the skillful and decrease and abandon the unskillful. So there's the that's the Satipatthana Sutta aspect of contemplation of mind, and it has its parallel in the Anapanasati Sutta. As we've been talking about, the Anapanasati Sutta and Satipatthana have very close parallels in their structure and in their content. And if you look at the third tetrad of the Anapanasati Sutta, you'll see that it's related to the contemplation of mind as well, but associated with the in and out breathing. And the four stages of contemplation with Anapanasati on the mind involve first knowing the actual quality of mind. We have the Chitta Patisangvedi, fully experiencing the mind, one breathes in and out, as the first step in that tetrad. Fully experiencing the mind basically parallels that the whole part of that Satipatthana where we're just observing, getting to know what is the quality of the mind, what does it feel like on a very affective level. And then the second stage would be the Abhipamodayang Chittang, which is gladdening the mind. And this is where we've entered into a more active contemplation, where we're noticing the quality of the mind and doing what we need to do to bring a sense of uplift and pleasure and easefulness into the mind. Pamoja, one of the qualities that we want to develop to make the mind more pliable, more easy to be with, and actually enjoyable. This is where contemplation, meditation, development of samadhi is considered to be an enjoyable process. We want to gladden the mind. And then the third stage of samadhang chittang, which would be often usually translated as concentrating the mind. We could say collecting the mind, composing the mind, following the gladdening aspect of it, if you take it in sequence. And then the fourth stage of mental cultivation or of developing the mind would be vimochayang chittang, which is liberating the mind. And again, referring to that cheto vimuti, the liberation of the mind, but not necessarily the full, complete liberation by wisdom. But the liberation, the temporary freedom that comes with the full development of samadhi. So this is what's considered the development of the mind, and as part of the Satipatthana process and part of the Anapanasati Sutta, those parallel each other. So all of this is towards the effort of developing what we can call the kusala citta, the wholesome or skillful heart. And as most of us are aware, that this development is something that is spent, there's a lot of time spent in the suttas, the Buddha and his disciples teaching all of the ways that we can develop kusala citta, the wholesome heart, the wholesome mind, as a precursor, in a sense, to the full liberation, the abandoning of all fabrications, the abandoning of all the ways that we can develop skillful qualities. It might be tempting to say, well, why don't we just, you know, listen to the wisdom teachings, the teachings that point directly towards liberation, towards directly experiencing pure awareness. Because we do get a lot of teachings from some of our teachers around that. And it's a great contemplation of dwelling in awareness just noticing the qualities of mind as they arise and pass away, and constantly reflecting on the quality of the liberated heart, the liberated mind, pure awareness, pure consciousness, different ways of referring to it, and experiencing that. And that's the goal that we're moving towards. We need to know where we're going to give us some direction. And it's often tempting to say, well, that's what I want. That's what I want to get. So let's just go right there and skip all the rest. Why do we have to spend so much time working on all the rest of it? But if you're familiar with the teachings at all, you just realize, well, the Buddha spends so much time instructing us in these basic foundational components of how to skillfully develop skillful qualities that form the foundation for this, because the mind is clouded, it's diluted, and if we just try and skip over the foundational work that needs to be done, then it's so easy to get distracted by the kilesa, the defilements that are so deeply embedded. It's just there's work to be done to create a very skillful kusala citta before we can just jump on to the complete relinquishment bandwagon. So I spend a lot of time, and I think I'd encourage most of us anyway to spend a fair amount of time in the stage of gladdening the mind, we get to know sort of what the mind, the experience of the mind, directly experiencing, fully experiencing the mind is, seeing what the quality, the affective quality is at any one time. But then, for the most part, before jumping into some of the subtle objects of contemplation, like in and out breathing, it can be quite subtle, just setting the stage so that the mind can easily slip into that more easeful state of concentration or composure that comes from something like anapanasati by kind of preparing the heart, preparing the mind in some ways. And to digress just a little bit, citta itself, I've been using the word mind mostly, but heart also, might be good to see if there's a bit of a definition. And it's a bit tricky because, as I understand it, citta, and this is something that Ajahn Jeff mentioned when he visited us up at the Hermitage a number of years ago, he pointed out that actually in the canon, there is no specific place where citta is definitely defined in a particular way. Citta is this. It's mostly understood through all of the examples and through inference in the canon. So what do we mean when we say citta and use the common translation of mind or the other common translation of heart, heart-mind sometimes? And it's a bit hard to discern out, and if the Buddha doesn't define it, it'd be kind of unusual for me to try and define it. But oftentimes it is described in terms of a more receptive or open, aware state or aware quality of mind, rather than the intellectual functioning of the evaluative mind or the mind that processes information and works in the realm of concept and abstraction. It's more of the aware, alert, openness, cognizing process that receives input and is affected by it on a deep level. Basic quality of citta, and it's a process, it's not a thing, it's a more of a process, and its basic attribute is awareness. So it's that more broad, open, affective component of mind or heart. Mind and heart are neither one of them very good translations, and sometimes it's better just to say citta, but those are the translations that we have in the English language anyway. So that quality, that fundamental quality of knowing or awareness. And citta is, when we talk about liberating the mind, is citta rather than the intellect or the personality that is, can be liberated from suffering. So this process of knowing, this process of awareness, this affective quality is what we can free. So as part of the process of freeing the heart, freeing the mind, we need to spend some time, as I was talking about, gladdening the mind, refreshing it, bringing it to a state of appreciation, joy, uplift, to kind of form the foundation. There's lots of different ways of doing that, lots of different reflections that we can bring in to help gladden the mind. I have a few favorite ones of my own, and I think I encourage people to have a little bit of a stash of contemplations, and these are active contemplations to bring up, to just sort of set that stage, to bring up a sense of enjoyment, a sense of, yeah, sense of pleasure, in a sense. One of my go-tos is always, I'll come back to it over and over again, you've heard me talk about reflections around my mother. She was quite a force in my life, particularly towards the end. And as she got older and more cognitively impaired herself, as well as physically impaired, spent more time going back and forth from here to the East Coast to help my sister look after her in different periods of time. My sister was the primary caregiver, and I helped as best I could from afar, but would go back periodically to be there. And as she got older and more impaired and needed more help, there was always an opportunity to spend time with her and get to experience some very tender, poignant kinds of moments that when I bring them up, they get that sense of ease, well-being. Sometimes it's not always a very cheerful kind of reflection, oftentimes reflecting on the difficulties and problems that an aging person experiences, but how it affected our relationship was always something that I could find some sense of easefulness when I recollect them. And there were a couple of real salient moments. Last week we were just having a spontaneous discussion, and some memories came up that I was, in more humorous ways, that I was recounting, because she was a kind of a scrappy person. She had a crusty personality and didn't take fools very seriously, and she always had some kind of snappy kind of comment, and I was not excluded from that. But there was a period of time where in the last several months of her life, my sister and I had to help move her up from her independent living in Florida to be closer to my sister in Massachusetts. And it was very difficult for her, of course, as one might expect. And it was a very trying moment for all of us. And in that process of moving her, we got halfway between Florida and Massachusetts and spent time at my brother's place in North Carolina. And a couple of things happened there that are very vivid in my memory that I use as contemplations when I need to kind of, if mindfulness of breathing is a bit too subtle and my mind is distracted and I need something to settle and bring a sense of pamoja up, then I often refer to a couple of these incidents. And one of them was at my brother's house and involved him. And there was some tension in their relationship, as there was in many mother-son relationships. And they, you know, were trying to always work things out the best they could. And there was one moment when she was expressing quite a lot of emotion, difficulty about how hard it was to be giving up her home in Florida and moving to a new place, unfamiliar territory, having to leave the closeness of some relatives in Florida and her very familiar surroundings. And my brother is a very quiet person, very introspective, and doesn't talk a whole lot. And we were all just sitting, the three of us were sitting around the table the dining room table, and she was actually opening up a bit in terms of expressing the difficulty of this move and this loss of her independence in a way that she didn't usually talk about. And we were listening, and I was encouraging her and trying to reflect. And my brother was quietly listening, and she just started to kind of break down a little bit and offer some real honest emotion that showed that she was starting to let it in, letting it percolate. And it was very tender. It was very, in a way, almost overwhelming on a heart level. And we were both listening. And then my brother just got up and just went over to her, didn't say anything, but put his arm around her and then just pulled her close to him. And she just melted right into him. And I was the fortunate witness of this and got to see this interaction between the two of them. And she was quietly crying. And he was just comforting her. And then she kind of looked up at him and she said, "You know, we are both so similar." She said, "You know, neither of us likes to go to these kinds of places and we don't do a very good job of it, but we share this in common. You and I are very similar in this way." And he just nodded and was there for it. And it's a very strong image that kind of just creates a lot of tenderness in my heart. And if I've got any kind of gnarly mind state going on, just reflecting on that and bringing up that image is a way of bringing up this sense of easefulness and kind of cuts through a whole lot of stuff. And then the mind will settle. The mind becomes more pliant, more malleable, and less agitated. So those kinds of things that bring up a sense of release are very useful and very legitimate, as long as they're along wholesome lines, very active kind of contemplation. Then another mom-related incident was later on when she had finally moved in. After several facilities that she spent time in, she moved in to a skilled nursing facility for the last 6 weeks of her life or so, and her mind was, her cognitive abilities were starting to deteriorate to some extent, and she was fading in and out of knowing who we were and who we weren't, and a little confusing. But there was one time when she was sitting up in her wheelchair, and my sister was sitting to one side of her, and one of the nurses was sitting to another side, and other family members around, and I was across from her. And I wasn't sure whether she was present or not, but we were just kind of hanging out together. And at one point, she did open her eyes and was looking in my direction, and I caught her attention and just said, I said, "Mom, do you know who I am? Are you with us here, or do you know who I am?" And all of a sudden, she just came right to, and she entered her body. She was somewhere else, but she found her way back and kind of opened wide-eyed, looked at me very intensely from across the table, fully present. And she looked at me and she pointed her finger at me and she said, "You are mine." And she'd never said that to me before in my entire life. She was always kind of cool and, you know, had a real strong independent streak. And it just was this moment of incredible, intense warmth and caring. And everybody in the room, you know, just, there was this collective, "Oh." And I felt the same way. And it just like it was this wall of metta, of mother metta coming, was quite moving. And it's a great image to bring up if the mind is feeling a bit constricted. So those are the kinds of things that I encourage people to have, you know, even if you haven't had particular incidents like that, or, you know, or you have a terrible relationship with your parents and that's a no-go place. Find something that you can pull up when you need that moment of easing the mind, opening the mind, broadening the mind, getting out of any kind of narrow, constricted state, particularly if you're sitting down for a period of meditation, rather than trying to just jump right into something like mindfulness of breathing. spend some time contemplating things that gladden the mind. And there's classic ones that people use. I have a friend who uses Buddha Nusati, recollection of the Buddha, which is one of the classic ones. When times are tough, he's having difficulty, he'll sit down quietly and just bring up an image, what his image is of what the Buddha might have looked like, and that he's in his presence, and just the two of them, and he'll bring up this scenario of seeing the Buddha bowing down and just saying a few words and receiving some sort of reassurance or openness, open quality from the Buddha, a response that he visualizes and experiences as extremely compassionate, fully understanding, and fully accepting, like that there's absolutely nothing that this my friend could be thinking or experiencing that the Buddha wouldn't be able to hold and understand, be compassionate around. So he brings that up as an actual contemplation to help ease his mind into a more receptive quality. So recollection of the Buddha or the Dhamma and the Sangha, those are classic recollections. Anything in any your own style that brings up that sense of easefulness, of pamoja, to set the stage for further deepening of the practice. Recollection of generosity. There's a lovely story in the teachings of the Buddha's chief lay woman disciple, Visakha, who went through a period of making many offerings to the Sangha of requisites. She made a point of giving different kinds of meals and food and cloth requisites to various members of the Sangha. And at one time, the Buddha said, well, you know, Visakha, why are you doing this? What's the motivation behind this, that you're, you know, making so many very generous and very kind offerings? And she said, well, and I paraphrase again here, she said, well, you know, when I give offerings to people in need, members of the Sangha, for requisites, and when I see them using them, see them being put to use, then I can reflect on that and reflect that that's the result of what I've been able to give, what I've been able to offer. And when I do that, my mind opens up. My mind, I feel glad, I feel happy. Again, this sense of pamoja arises. And the happy mind will concentrate easily. I can, you know, experience this recollection of how I've been generous and without any difficulty. When I sit down to practice meditation, then the mind moves very easily into that collected, gathered, peaceful state of mind without much effort. And he said, the Buddha replied, "That's good, good. That's the proper way to reflect on generosity and how to use that as a reflection." There is other reflections. Another one that I enjoy using sometimes is just the recollection of the peace of Nibbana. It's one of the contemplations that the Buddha recommends to, even if you're not experiencing the final goal quite yet, one can imagine what that might be like as a contemplation, as a perceptual contemplation, establishing the freedom of mind, the ease, the complete liberation, elimination of all the substrata of the defiled mind, the causes of suffering, absence of greed, hatred, delusion, and just that permanent liberation. What might that feel like? The sense of complete release and freedom, lack of, just no more suffering. And just let that be something that eases the mind. It's not, you know, the full thing, but it's a perceptual practice that will help open the mind, open the heart, so that one can then move into more easeful, settled state of mind. So many different ways that we can prepare the mind, settle the mind, open the mind. Because as the Buddha says in some of the teachings, one of the teachings, what we frequently think about, what we frequently ponder on, will become the nature of our mind. So there's an active component to it. We have to actually apply our attention in a very skillful way to bring up these qualities that will then become the nature of our mind. That's how we recondition citta into skillful qualities. Because the heart, the mind, the citta will pick up and absorb these skillful qualities, and essentially it's very mirror-like, so that whatever the qualities, aspects, the objects of mind that are being encouraged and developed and attended to, that actually is the mind will absorb them in a sense and take on those qualities as a whole. So gladdening the mind, if we take it in sequence again with the Anapanasati reflections, sutta reflections, then the next step would be the samadhi, experiencing the collected, the composed mind as the mind is uplifted and gladdened, and we're able to attend more fully and completely in an absorptive kind of way, really absorbing into something more subtle like the in and out breathing, or more subtle qualities of the heart and mind, qualities like equanimity, and really feeling, settling, composing, simplifying the mind into a very deep state of simplicity and alertness and awareness, then that's what we call the development of samadhi, that third stage in that section of the Anapanasati Sutta. And then with that clarity and alertness and presence of mind that's uncomplicated and very straightforward and very discerning, we bring in the quality of discernment to help free the mind, at least temporarily, with the aid of samadhi, at least a temporary freedom that we have until we've fully eliminated all the conditions that keep us involved in samsara. So this is what we call contemplating the mind, the third satipatthana, the third frame of reference. We work with the body on a very tangible level. It's a very clear place to keep our attention focused on, and without contemplation of the body, there's really no chance for liberation, according to the Buddha. We look at the contemplation, satipatthana, of feelings and perceptions, vedana nupassana, as a way of identifying where it is that we get caught craving, and the ways that we get involved in the world of seeking things that we want, seeking to get away from things that we don't like, and that back and forth between trying to get and trying to get rid of, and being confused by much of the world around us. That's the contemplation of feeling part of satipatthana. And then moving on in this sequence anyway to the mind itself, the affective qualities, and how to gladden and simplify the mind to where we can start developing insight, which is often exemplified in some of the teachings in the fourth satipatthana, which we haven't spent a huge amount of time yet, but we'll be moving into. So just a few thoughts on citta nupassana, the third foundation of mindfulness, the third establishing of mindfulness. Probably we'll be hearing more about that in the days to come. So I'll leave it there for this evening.